Good evening, this is Rebecca. What shall we look at this evening? Reminder to press star 6 to unmute and then remute yourself.
This is Jan.
Hey, Jan.
Hi, Rebecca. Well, I just wanted to report back about something we talked about, or that I asked about last week, which was when Jen was facilitating about what Sherry had mentioned, the facilitating conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The one thing that really stuck with me that Jen had said was, you know, the response of, is that so? And mm-hmm. So I experimented with that during the week, and it was so helpful. Because it, first of all, I had to be looking to mm-hmm. notice conditioning
yeah.
and
uh-huh.
what it was saying. And then that response, is that so, just created even, I don't know how to say it, except that it felt like there was a greater distance then.
Uh-huh.
And so it just was very helpful in
yeah.
all ways, just very simple and really helped me keep focused on seeing when conditioning was there, when it was trying to sleaze in, is how I say it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, yeah, there's so much in that. So first of all, there was the intention to facilitate conditioning in the way that you had heard talked about, and the suggestion was made, is that so, to be sort of the handle or the, you know, response that you give. And one thing you noticed was that you really had to be present in order to use the tool. You know, it's one thing to have the tool, but it's another to actually use it. And so there was a certain degree of looking, of paying attention, of watching for that opportunity. And then when you actually would do that, to whatever conditioning would say, you would say back internally or externally, I guess, is that so? And you could sense a larger distance from, and this is where it's really more of a question, is it from the voice itself, from the identification?
Yeah, a greater mm-hmm. distance from it making it that, maybe another way to say it, it was that much clearer. It became just clearer and clearer when conditioning was there. When
uh-huh.
you know, when that response of, is that so? Because it was so, as I watched, it became clear and clear when it was conditioning. And so that
yes.
response of, is that so? It just confirmed it, I guess, is one way to say it. That, yes, in fact, that's who's saying that. It certainly isn't me.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going, Jan, and is that it's so clarifying because so many times we can think that what we're thinking is us. You know, oh, I'm just going around
yeah.
thinking. I'm just being, that's just me. And what you're describing is having a very effective, simple way to distinguish what is ego and what is, in this case, Jan. What is the, you know, what is the human being? And if we're the one that's looking for it, noticing the voice, and then actually, you know, responding to it with a, is that so, then it's pretty darn clear that that's not us that's saying whatever it is it's saying.
Yeah. What just dropped in when you were saying that is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate's response to my deciding to try that, like, the first comment was, that's not going to work. It's just too simple. That's not going to work. And, oh, is that so? and then going ahead and just continuing with that, and it was, I don't know, it does get comical at times, you know.
Oh, it is so funny. You know, when you can hear its, you know, namby-pamby protestations, oh, that's never going to work, and truly laugh at it, boy, that is really a fun place to be. And with that, is that so? You know, I project a real, you had the upper hand in that interaction.
Yeah, well, that's where it puts it, because we're the ones seeing seeing it rather than living it. I guess it's one way to put it. And there's one other thing I wanted to mention. The other thing I've been practicing, I think I had mentioned in one of the, I think it was one of the morning shows, that I had this extreme experience of depression that I just, that's not a normal, anyway, it was very striking to me, the level of depression. And then, so looking at how I would practice with that, in the aftermath of that, what I see is going hand in hand with what I just described of is my focus being on fun and love, sort of hand in hand, that because when I was working on projects at home, I noticed they became work, and, you know, it was almost like a suffering place rather than the joy for the reason I was doing the project and the love.
Yeah.
And so I started, after this morning's radio show, Sherry had said to someone that called in, well, every 5 minutes. Well, I wasn't in the kind of project I could do that, but I did it every half hour for the fun and love focus to check in on that. And what a fun day it was. I mean, that along with is that so? Conditioning really didn't have much of a chance. And, of course, what I was told was that that's just going to take way too much time. You've got way too much to do, blah, blah, blah. And and then you just do it.
Well, and, you know, how could it not have been a very fun day if you were stopping every 30 minutes and looking for the fun? Moving attention to fun and love. Was that the fun and love? I mean, how could it not just be a splendid day? Because the quality of our life is determined by the focus of our attention. And there was your intention to put attention on fun and loving. And so, it's no wonder it was a very wonderful day.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, the main thing, just being so grateful for the guidance, whether it's for is that so, or the focus on, you know, to take those breaks, to do the focus of what we want our lives to be, just tremendous gratitude. So thank you.
Well, yeah, and I just want to underline that, because that's really key, is that their guidance is there, and it was taken. It was taken on. It was taken in and actually practiced.
Yeah.
Applied. Yeah. So, you know, that's, you know, I think it was on the radio show this morning too that was said, you know, the guidance is coming through all the time, you know, every moment. And so to just acknowledge that, gratitude for that guidance for sure. And also for the person who actually takes it on.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more practice it seems, the more likelihood of taking it on, or the ability, willingness, whatever, all those things for taking it on.
Yeah, whatever wonderful combination, right? We kind of get a momentum, get that wheel of karma moving in the other direction.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
Is it Penny?
Penny.
I saw something in working on the email class, year-long class the other day, that was a brand new revelation to me, and it's been so interesting to look at and helpful in terms of understanding some things about myself. So, you know, so we identify these voices that speak, and then we talk about the beliefs and assumptions that underlie them, and then we look at the subpersonalities that those voices tend to reveal, or that subpersonalities are sort of collections of those voices.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at continuing irritation having to do with a health thing, and I was looking at feeling like this, you know, I didn't deserve to have this happen to me, and I looked at voices that were like cheated and defensive and, you know, these various things. And then when it came time to turn them into subpersonalities, a subpersonality emerged, just dropped in, that really surprised me, and it was entitled.
Entitled. I thought you were going to give us a title. The name of the subpersonality is Entitled.
Yes, Entitled, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that was so helpful to see. And because what I saw was, it wasn't just that there's someone who thinks this is all unfair or I wish this didn't happen, or but there's someone who feels somehow I'm entitled to not have this kind of thing happen.
Uh-huh.
And boy, that was such an eye-opener. I hadn't gotten what a deep-seated feeling that was, that I don't deserve this, and I live the way I'm supposed to, and this happened, and I had never had it framed that way, and having it framed that way was just really clarifying.
Yes. Oh, that is, yeah. Well, that last thing that you said is just such a good point. To have it framed in a way that had never been framed before, because, you know, I bet you have seen, you know, things, you heard that kind of language. It doesn't sound like that was the new part, you know, the irritation at the health thing or this shouldn't be happening. But to have it framed and that in a way that dropped in, new, never seen before, and so, so succinct. It's like entitled. There it is.
And that word just dropped in, and it helped me to understand how sort of deep-seated this is. Why the continuing sense of frustration goes on. It's not just around. It's not just around the health thing recurs, but if there's that deep a sense of this shouldn't happen to me, then of course there's going to be a strong feeling every time it does happen. And now that I have heard that word, it just helps to make clear, oh, I get it. I guess how deep this is.
Yeah, yeah. Because if I'm tracking the point you're making, it's that, you know, you can let go of the conversation, drop the conversation every time it comes up. But by seeing the depth from which that conversation is spinning or, you know, stirring, it really helps to it's sort of like the difference between pulling a weed out by its root, you know, and just mowing it down or something, you know, because you're really seeing the what's under the surface, and that was that whole posture or personality of entitled that from which those that perspective was going to come in any number of content areas, it sounds like.
Yes. And then the other piece that the other word that dropped in for a subpersonality again, which it dropped in a word I had never thought to use in the past, was trapped.
Trapped.
And trapped is I've tried everything, nothing works. I can't get out of this. I have no options. And there have been times in my life where I have been aware of feeling like that, but not at all recently. But again, the thing that was so helpful was getting it that if there is some sense, this entitlement, that this is just ought to be impossible for the situation to be there, then if it's there, there's no sense of, this is just another phase of life. This is just another undulation. It's like it's so untoward, undeserved that there are no options within it. You know, I just got how the entitlement sets up a sense of if it doesn't work out, then I have no idea what to do, and I have no options. And to be able to clarify that and to get it that, you know, this is just another thing, and it passes, and then it goes through, and it passes. It's such a different place from which to see it. So it's been huge to see those two
drop. Yeah, and how they work in tandem together. You know, because as long as you're entitled, when of course you can't change things, because sometimes you just can't, then you're trapped. And if you unlock and let loose in this entitled, then you're free to not feel trapped.
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, they're a little mighty duo.
Mighty duo that now have lost their power, or at least a lot of it, in the recognition.
Yep.
Wow.
And then just a final thing that was just so great about seeing all that was when that dropped in, I was aware that the entitled, especially when that dropped in, I was aware that there was absolutely no self-hate associated with that. seeing that. And I could see how that could be a setup for self-hate, to say, oh, my God, you feel that way. But there was no self-hate involved at all. It was just so helpful to see that open up. And, oh, another moment of gratitude for practice, you know. That was a rabbit hole I did not have to go down.
Yes, yes, yes. That wonderful sense of a clean insight where there's no self-hate, there's no attachment, there's no backlash, you know, that comes in, and a rabbit hole that you could just sidestep altogether and really, you know, be deeply grateful for the insight and go with it. Practice it. Take it on. You take it. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you know, Penny, you're just making such a powerful testimony or argument for actually doing the exercise, you know, just really doing it.
Yeah. Wow. If I just kind of thought about it, it wouldn't have happened, but having to do the exercise and write it down, it just dropped right in there.
Yep. We open that. It becomes the portal through which life can reach us.
Yeah. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you, Penny.
Michael?
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Rebecca. I signed up for the new Commitment Buddy program.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with that?
Yeah.
And when I first read about it, I thought, oh, this is genius. And I mean, the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's what, it's just so zen. And so I signed up, and I'm having exactly the experience I expected, and it is just so fabulous. So I text my buddy in the morning, say I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And you know what I've noticed is that I put a couple of work things in there, and I feel more compelled to do it because I'm going to have to text my buddy than anything related to my boss or my work commitments.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, this is a sacred, this is a sangha commitment. You know, this is sacred.
Oh my gosh. That is so, go ahead. No, go ahead. I
was just going to say, you know, come hell or high water, I am going to get this done, whatever I have laid out for today.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And that is the simplicity, the simple brilliance of the setup, right? Because actually your buddy is not saying anything back to you other than gosho or didn't get the text or whatever that, you know, but they're not like saying, Michael, don't forget, you know, it's time for you.
Nothing. No reminders,
no facilitation, not even any reflection. It's just, so in that way, it's, you know, here you are. I am not going to not do this commitment because I know at the end of the day, I'm going to have to text that person. And really what that shows is that, let's see how to say it. The only thing we're really not wanting to let down is ourselves, because there's nothing else being fed back to us on the other end. It truly is the blank white wall, you know, in a sense, reflecting back.
Yes. And having a live Sangha member, person, attentive, who is aware that I have made this commitment. I mean, I might as well write it across the sky. That's how public it feels to me.
Yeah.
You know, when I make that commitment.
Ooh, what a good point. Yes, because here's this, you know, this Sangha that means so much to us all, you know, that we show up for it, we love all that, and to make a commitment and have that witnessed and held in awareness by another live human being is just like making it public. It's right. You might as well write it across the sky. That's how, well, I don't know what the word would be, but you feel to that commitment.
Yeah, bound or binding.
Bound.
But in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. That is so beautiful. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
bound
been,
to it.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And then 2 days in a row, I forgot the evening follow-up. You know, there's two texts, right? I say, this is what I'm going to do. And then at the end of the day, I text and say, you know, I did it or I didn't do it. And I forgot the evening one. And then, you know, thanks to practice, with no self-hate. And then what dropped in is, oh, that needs to be part of my morning commitment. I commit to A, B, and C, and to text again in the evening to let you know whether I did.
Yeah.
And so just fold it back into the practice commitment. And, you know, and set a couple of alarms. That helps, too. But, yeah, I'll pause there. Okay.
Well, what's striking me about what you're saying is just the outrageous support for this person who wants to keep this commitment, who really wants to do this, whatever it is, a couple of work commitments or whatever it is, right? And so he's going to sign up for the program. He's going to, and then, oh, okay, here's a little glitch. Forgot to send those two texts. How can we support him in that? Okay, let's fold it into the morning text. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it just has such a, I'm projecting anyway, a feeling of kindness, feeling of support.
Yes, yes, yes. And the other piece of it I'm seeing is that if I commit to doing something, you know, it's going to happen unless I'm, you know, hit by a bus or it taps some sort of tremendous willingness and focus, which is just a tremendous gift.
Yeah. So the commitment itself evokes this willingness and this, that is such a gift, this focus, I think you said. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So whoever dropped that in, that's a genius level. It's just so, again, it's just so simple. I just love how simple it is.
Yeah.
And all I get back twice a day is Gesho.
Yeah.
And it's just genius.
Yeah, it really is. And it is such a powerful expression of, it's an expression of the power of Sangha, because, you know, you're right. It's that live human being that's on the other end of that is so, that really is so supportive, even though, and they don't have to utter two words, you know, they just utter one word in a sense, you know, and that's it. And it just is the power of that presence, I think, or something. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's so fun to hear your experience about it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Michael.
Justin?
Hey, Justin.
Hey, Rebecca. Hey, I want to share about a practice success that I had recently with my recording and listening practice.
Great.
Yeah. I went through a really rough day 2 weeks ago, which is usually how successes come, they seem. But just a rough day and a lot of, like, unconscious choices and behaviors, and then I woke up the next morning and it just kind of dropped in that, like, something needed to change or else it could definitely happen again. And thankfully it dropped in to just have the recorder going, like, all day, but, like, literally all day, like, in earbuds in at all times, kind of regardless of what I was doing. And I'll be darned if it didn't work out beautifully. That was like 2 weeks ago, and I mean, I feel like the level of commitment I have to the recorder is just, it's night and day. It's pretty amazing.
Oh my gosh, that is such a neat thing to hear. Because okay, so there you are, you have a really rough day, you know it, you wake up and know it, and had the presence of mind, to see, well, if something doesn't change, this is going to happen again. And so what drops in is to put the earbuds in and have that going all day long. But really, no matter what you're doing, you can pretty much have at least one earbud in all the time, right? And that, it sounds like, made a tremendous difference.
Yeah, it really did. And two things come to mind as you say that. One is, I'm pretty sure Sherry said this about, like, you're going to listen to something.
Yeah.
So you might as well make it positive, right? Like, why not take the driver's seat? Because you, probably something's going to be going on up there, right? Yeah. So
some kind of conversation is going to be going on in the head. Might as well make it a positive one.
Yeah, exactly. And then I saw how vulnerable I was, like, at night, because I was, like, you know, like, when I'm sleeping and wake up in the middle of the night, and I guess I always took it, like, I always assumed, like, come on, like, I'm sleeping, like, nothing can happen, but, like, no, that's definitely not the case. Mm-hmm. So I think I got this from actually you, but just having the recorder going, like, at night, like, even when I'm mm-hmm. sleeping, I've been kind of experimenting mm-hmm. with that on and off, which is a super interesting experience, but, yeah, it's just kind of, that door's not really open, right, for ego to come in there.
Yeah, exactly. Because yeah, I think, you know, when you said a minute ago, yeah, well, what is it? I'm sleeping. You know, there can be an assumption in there that, well, ego can't get at me now, or ego, but ego
right.
doesn't sleep, you know, and so it gets at us in our minds and our dreams, whatever, I don't know. But to have that alternative going on, it truly is having, like, the, oh, this is a terrible image, but the big guns on the side of us, of the human being, you
uh-huh.
know, and
right,
kind of
right.
watching out for that that self-hate, the negativity, all that kind of stuff, and it just doesn't give it an opening.
No, it doesn't. And yeah, just kind of as a last thought, you know, I was thinking about my relationship with my recorder earlier today, and I made a recording on it. And I mean, I realized I've only had a recording listening practice for like 4 months since the New Year's Eve retreat. But I just like thought of like, it was kind of like awkward at first with the recorder. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, like kind of when you're with another person, you don't really know what to say. You're kind of like warming up. And then it's just been beautiful to, like, yeah, see, like, over these past, like, 4 months, just the, yeah, I don't know, it's just become so comfortable, right? And, yeah, it's interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Justin. It is such a, you know, it is just such, like, a best friend, you know, that you get to carry
mm-hmm.
around and have at your disposal, at your fingertips all the time. You know, that never gets tired of listening to us, that never gets tired, it says all these wonderful things that we love to hear, you know, in our own voice, you know.
Right.
It's just, yeah, it is. It's just magical in that way.
It is, and there's so much flexibility, like getting past what ego tells me is okay on the recorder and what's not. Like just doing recording open air, recording like music
yeah.
article, my recordings, reading books to it. It's like,
yeah.
I don't know, you just kind of get these riches of like, things that are all like representations of, you know, the human life, which is beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, and one last thing or point about that, because, you know, in my experience, another thing that is so fun about that, the reading the musings, reading the, you know, whatever, poems, whatever you love, is, to me anyway, it gives me an insight into, in this case, Rebecca, about what
mm-hmm.
she loves. You know,
mm-hmm.
what is she like? What does she like to hear?
Mm-hmm.
What does she like to say? And to, you know, that we get to do that and get to know ourselves on that level that we wouldn't have had the opportunity to otherwise.
Oh, truly, right? It really is such an intimate relationship, and you have it all on there. You know, not just the good times, but like the bad times too.
Yeah.
And just kind of with him, like during all
yep.
that. It's pretty beautiful.
Yep. It's like just being with Justin, just getting to go through life with Justin. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Justin.
This is June.
Hey, June.
Hey. I just want to echo what Michael was saying. I'm also in the Keeping Commitments program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having very much the experience he talked about.
Uh-huh. Isn't
yeah.
that fun? Say more.
It is. Well, there again, what he said is just something about having somebody else to somebody that I'm going to be reporting to
mm-hmm.
that just creates the energy to go beyond. I don't want to. I don't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or to go beyond. It's not really important. I'm not going to do it today. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing that can so often just put the brakes on anything I've committed to doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So you just kind of nailed the two big resistances. It's not that important, or I don't want to, I don't feel like it, and how they can just stop us from the commitment or whatever you want to do in the day. And having someone to whom you're going to report it just side skirts those traps.
Well, it does for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and then does for Michael too. It sounds like, yeah.
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 And there's just again for me, there's something about knowing that it's not going to be some big conversation. Yeah. It's just going to be, I'm either going to fail or not.
Uh-huh. Just fail, yeah. Kind of like, did you say fail, like F-A-I-L,
yes.
Fail?
Yeah,
yes. I'm either going to fail or not. There's not going to be a big conversation, a big what to do about it. It's just right there. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we get to see that.
Yes, yeah. I feel like there's probably more to see as we keep going. But yeah, it's a fun and really helpful program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It you know, it's fun and very helpful, and I too am there with you that I suspect there's gonna be a whole lot more to see as we live the program a while. You know, just like with reflective listening buddies, how much it's, you know, we've seen into that whole, what that is, you know, and this keeping commitments buddy program is, I just think is already giving us so much in richness and as you say, fun and success and all of those kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Margaret's here.
Hey, Margaret.
Hey. Well, this is calling me to weigh in on the Commitments Buddy program because mm-hmm. I saw that I really wanted to facilitate for it, and that there was no way I was going to facilitate and not do the program because I hadn't done it. And and it was such
let me just clarify that for people who may not get the setup. So you're both a buddy and a participant. The buddy is
right.
The one that receives the text, you know, that's kind of sending back the gusho or didn't receive. And then you're also a participant, one who's making the commitment and keeping it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And one of the things that that I've looked at over the years in facilitating other things and so forth is just this thing about we will do for the, or showing up for practice and all, mm-hmm. is doing for the love of others what we wouldn't do for ourselves. And it seems like I really get it that I need to do this for myself. And this is helping stop conditioning come in and say, oh, what good is that going to do? Like, or why would you sign up for that where somebody's just going to say, gosh, oh, to you?
Mm-hmm.
But it is so much bigger than that. It's just, yeah, I mean, it's everything that's been shared about it. For me, and I also need to show up for those people who are writing me,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which I love that too. It helps me.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Okay, so let me reflect some of that because that's really, is that background noise to you, Margaret? asking. Are you?
I don't think so. I'm unmuted,
okay.
But I don't.
So,
so
maybe if yeah, really, I know you're unmuted. So maybe if folks can double check and if they are unmuted to mute. So you saw that the wonderful adage, "You'll do for the love of others what we might not be willing to do for ourselves," and so conditioning would bring up, you know, oh, why? What good is that going to do? Just somebody just replying, gusho, what's the big deal about that? And yet you were wanting to participate in a way that, well, I'm showing up for others. I want to show up for myself, too. I really need that, and I want to. And so that choice was made. And mm-hmm. then to be able to see that it really does, that there really is the support there, that you really feel that in your participation with the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like it's also around more than just this one program, because I also signed up for the recording and listening mm-hmm. practice, the group practice, mm-hmm. which I've not done before, sort of for similar kinds of arguments by conditioning. Mm-hmm. And I am just loving that. I can't say enough about how much that has done for my recording and listening practice. It's totally annihilated and conditioning's thing of, well, what would you say? Or there's nothing to talk about, because it's provided in the program. And it's so obvious that would be helpful to do that. To have those conversations with yourself, to record about it, you know, it's so loving.
Well, and so, you know, in the way, Well, because I just wanted to underline that, because it's sort of what Justin was talking about, the how exciting it is to find all these different things to record. And it sounds like that's the experience you're having with the RL training, because there was ego. Well, what do I talk about? I don't know. What do I, you know? And here it is. You can do this, and you can do that. Oh, here's this. And it just blows wide open the possibilities. And so it's really expanded your recording and listening practice in a huge way.
It has. And it's like I see that my practice itself has just been open to so much more exploration around just even how I meditate, how it's sort of like there's a willingness to be present in a way. It's not out of desperation. It's out of genuine love for this practice.
Yeah, genuine love for this practice. And just
and
the
I
desire
think,
to be present.
Yeah, and recognizing that ego hasn't been, ego's been present so much and distracting me so much, and I haven't risen to the occasion to stop that. But now it's, or it hasn't happened, and now it is. It's, and I love on the daily, our morning program this morning, how I think it was at the very end of the program, the person who was sharing about, Brian, I believe, who was talking about, there is no, you know, why would I leave this perfect moment to go to some other imagined moment?
Yeah.
And to me, that just says it all right there in a nutshell. And that's all ego's trying to have me do all the time, is leave this moment for to say no to something that I actually want, that the heart wants.
Yeah. And to see that in all these ways that you've been describing through the Keeping Commitment studies and the recording and even your meditation and all those things that are the way that you're rising to the occasion, to choose presence instead of what sounds like has been, ego just running roughshod over you. And that part of what Brian said on the why would we want to leave this perfect moment for an imaginary more perfect moment, you know? And right. and to get that on a deep level is just really big, isn't it?
It is, and it feels like the deepness of the level of getting it is finally like including more of my body in the whole process rather than just my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly just practicing following the breath from how you would if you had just done a yoga workout before, and you're totally in your body.
Yeah,
it's like what a difference that makes, and it feels like that's more available to me is to just be in another realm of where the lens is, where the filter is looking. Not even that, of just being present to another, maybe another form of intelligence from the body.
That's a beautiful way of saying it, to be really present to the another form of intelligence in the body. Well, and the body is the form of intelligence, right? And to get to see the world through the intelligence and be with the intelligence of the body through the breath, through the movement, just in the body.
Right.
It's just night and day difference than being in the head all the time.
Well, it is, and it also feels like there's more acceptance to me in the body, even when, for me, things have been not physically what I'd want them to be right now either. It's like the body itself is more accepting of that and more cares more about me than, you know, the upper regions above the neck.
Well, because conditioned mind, that acceptance cannot happen in conditioned mind.
Right.
It lives. It can happen through the body, but not in conditioned mind. And you're getting to experience that.
Yes, that's what it's a good workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
All right. Carolyn.
Hey, Carolyn.
Hey, Rebecca. I've been looking at how I have been controlled within the structure of time.
Mm-hmm. How you've been controlled in the structure of time.
Yeah, and the sort of the sense I've had for the past month is what I used to sort of consider the most important things or the things I wanted to give my attention to have just been flipped on their head.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna ask you, are you saying that has happened, that the things that you want to give your time and attention to, that has just flipped on its head?
Well, it's flipped on its head in the way that I'm actually, I think, having the experience of actually spending time on the things that my heart wants to spend time on.
So you are actually getting to spend time on the things that the heart really wants to spend time on.
Yes, and what I'm struck by was that I was confused about who I was, and what I wanted, and not in a, I mean, I wasn't doing horrible things, but I was doing things that basically kind of fed into the idea that I wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And without access to these different activities and these different interactions, I'm having this amazing experience that not only am I enough, but there's enough time
mm-hmm.
to do what the heart really wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if I'm tracking what you're finding is that when acting out of the mistaken identity of I'm not enough, then there would be things that would take up your time and your energy and things that you would do that just weren't. They just weren't really speaking to the heart. They weren't really the fullest expression of who you are. And as those have been let go, or maybe that belief has been seen through or whatever, if it's facilitated the change, you're now finding yourself really able to do the things that you do love to do, and in that are finding that not only are you indeed enough, but there's enough time and there's enough everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so some of the activities I was involved with were things that I would almost sort of shade toward the self-improvement side.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to learn more. I need to know how to do this better. That kind of always coming from kind of a place of dissatisfaction about how I was.
Well, yeah, which makes sense if what's driving it is that I'm not enough. Because
yeah.
then, of course, then you need to get better, you need to improve, you need to, you know, really just do those things that'll try to make you enough.
Yeah,
says the underlying belief, right?
Yeah, but basically what's happened with the pandemic is I feel like someone lit my hair on fire and threw me over a cliff.
In a good way?
Carolyn? In a really good way.
Oh, good.
I mean, you know, ego was like, no, I don't want to practice like my hair is on fire. That's too uncomfortable. It's just amazing because it becomes really clear without even having to try and figure things out or what it becomes really clear what it is I want to spend my time doing.
Yeah. Okay, I do see what you mean then. Like the whole hair on the fire thrown over clip. Because it's like I don't want to waste my life on this other stuff anymore. It's really
yeah.
clear what I want to do and I get to do it like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that just sounds liberating.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it there is a freedom in that because there's a trust in knowing that it's like I can make good choices.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, the story my whole life has been that I'm not, you can't trust me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's just so, I can't think of a good superlative, like, but it's just so true. Like everything that I've been told about myself is turning out not to be true.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like proving it to yourself, proving it to the marrow of your bones that is not true. All that stuff,
yeah.
that story, is just not true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for everything.
Oh, thank you.
This is Jen.
And Jen.
Okay. I've been struck by a number of the conversations, and the word trust was just mentioned in that last conversation, and putting that together with the conversation about recording and listening earlier, one of the things that I've been so struck by, I was in another practice conversation earlier today, and as I was talking about something, trust was reflected back. And I just realized, wow, that really is, that nails it. The process of, one of the ways we sometimes talk about it is learning to trust myself.
Mm-hmm.
Trust life. I'll see if I can find an example. I mean, so the overarching thing that is striking me so much is how it feels like it's such a process, in the sense of, well, here's a really concrete example that I've talked about for years, which is that, I mean, I don't know, probably 7 years ago or something like that, I realized that I didn't want to check email on my phone, that I wanted checking email to be a very discreet, you know, thing that happened in a certain context. And one of the ways to support, a huge way to support myself in that, was by not using my phone for email. And so I set out to do that, and I did. Probably, honestly, probably 3 years later. It probably took me 3 years to actually completely nail that. But that's actually a perfect illustration of, I feel like the process of nailing that taught me so much. And I think the main thing, as I look at that, is a sense of trust. Because I am aware of referencing that a lot. That particular example feels like it has sort of like cut the path for me, in a sense, for so many other areas, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, let me see if I'm with you. So that one example has been a powerful touchstone and lived experience of choosing to do something and then just over time doing it, training yourself, however, whatever verb you would want to put in that, but sticking with it. And it just, and it shows you, and it took a while, right, to nail it, but you did. And to point back to that, as you do, to see that is, and it ties in with trust, in the sense that, and see if I'm tracking what you're saying, in the sense that Jen can be trusted, that there is this experience that she had, and it shows that, it demonstrates that.
And that, let's see, how would I articulate it? Yes, that Jen can be trusted, and that it's almost like, so the something like that drops in, you know, it would be a good idea not to check email on my phone. And I project, at least for me, the reason it takes so long to nail it is that I get identified with ego. Well, yeah, I do want to check email on my phone. I like that. Or I have to. I mean, there's this thing that's going on. I just need to check that one thing. You know, I mean, so all the various shades of ego that show up, which, A, that's incredibly helpful, right? Especially, you know, going from April 18th, if we drop the self-hate with it, that's unbelievably helpful, because it will reveal every ego process there is. And I cycle through feeling identified with them. So it feels like I do want to check email on my phone, you know, all of that. But one of the huge things that was revealed in that process is I actually do not want to check email on my phone. And it wasn't, so I think it's like an intellectual idea, like, well, yeah, I just feel like I should. But see, the thing is, what's revealed through the process of no self-hate, but simply going through it and actually experiencing all of it, what got revealed is, I don't want to. I do not. Yeah. It doesn't benefit me. I don't want to do that. And so I think the trustworthy part is that what comes out of that is that, and I'm really not sure how to talk about this, because I was going to say the authenticity feels like it's able to relax. And but it's not my experience that that the authenticity is touched in any way. So it's more like just those parts that don't want to be pushed in that way, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that feels like there's a trust that builds there.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are these, there's a trust that gets built as you, Wu Wei phrase of mistaken identity.
Yeah.
Keeps dropping in as you're talking, because there's that 3-year process. Well, I really do. I need to. And well, look, it's so much going on. All of those things that cycle through the identities, the ego, and mm-hmm. what you got really crystal clear on, it sounds like, is no, I don't. It mm-hmm. doesn't serve me. I don't. And so in that recognition, that deep recognition that it is not the human being, the authenticity or whoever, whatever, that does not want to check email on the phone. And
yeah.
so by that, and in coming to that, there's a relaxation that can happen.
There is. And as you reflect that back, what I really see is that, I can't even remember how I started out talking about it, but basically how transferable it is the thing that's been striking me so much. Because what it is, so I just had one today that right now feels much more real. Like periodically the voice does still cycle through, like, why don't you just check that on my phone? And it's laughable. Like and it barely cycles through at all anymore, which, come to think of it, that's really helpful to see. I don't think I'd have even really seen that, because I haven't even looked at it in months and months and months and months, probably over 6 months, because it doesn't try it anymore, because it truly doesn't work. But there's another thing that's not dissimilar that, you know, I mean, in on a process level, that came up today, and that feels much more real. But I think what is so helpful is to have worn something out so thoroughly, there's that mm-hmm. sense of, like, that's probably not me either. It's very likely
yeah.
not me. Right?
Yeah.
And so then there's this, mm-hmm. instead of then getting into a fight with that, okay, no, I shouldn't do that, don't be that way, don't feel that way, don't have that reaction, there's just this, oh, right. If I just stay here, just stay present, this thing is going to wear itself out. As long as I'm just willing to go through whatever it is, it'll wear itself out.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that moment. Moment of, oh, right. Oh, right.
Right.
This smells very familiar. You know?
Yeah.
And I can see, if this is what it was sort of evoking, that sense of trust, I can so see where that would do that, because there it is. It's that recognition. It's, in a way, it's that maturity of having lived through that other experience of 3+ years
mm-hmm.
and gotten to the other side where it really feels worn out, like it's worn through. And then to see this new content, same process kind of thing come up, and then have that reaction that you just described. Oh, right. I bet you it'll wear itself out too. Yeah, it just feels like a real trusting and trustworthy place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a whole other way to, well, speaking of keeping commitments, a whole other way to keep commitments, you know, a whole other
yeah.
way to work with it. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Ashwini.
Hey, Ashwini.
So I was looking at something that the constancy of the religious experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been having a wonderful time with birds lately.
You've been having a wonderful time with birds. Is that what you said?
Yes, bird song. Bird song.
Bird song. Uh-huh.
I'm just surrounded by it. I wake up to it. When I work, the birds are outside. There's just birds everywhere. Mm. And I'm aware of how delighted I am and where it takes me to listen to those birds.
Mm-hmm.
And I just having a good time listening to the bird song and feeling delighted about birds.
Uh-huh.
And it was just one of those, I was listening to some old recordings, and a recording from a Your Practice retreat 5 years ago cycled through. And in the koan that I picked, the answer to the koan was, listen to the bird.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh. So the answer to the koan that you were working with 5 years ago was listen to the bird. And that's been your dominant experience of late, of being delighted and being just swimming in bird song and being delighted in that.
Right. Well, what I went to from that last conversation is the sense of trust of being completely guided. Because since 5 years ago, which I don't even remember the answer to the koan was listening to the bird, I can remember countless occasions where the bird has called me to hear, where it's been the call that has guided me to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just, it's just what this is a religious experience where there is such trust over and over again that life is revealing to me that I'm perfectly guided. I'm perfectly guided. When I don't know, I can never know the information that I receive in the moment when it becomes needed or necessary, but that the threads are always being shown, and then it's woven into something that may or may not make sense much, much later, but there is a tapestry that's being woven, even if I can't see it.
Yes. Yes, yes. That phrase you use, I think the constancy of the religious experience, that there is this tapestry, this weaving of that is happening in our life, whether we can see it or not. And in this example that you brought up with the birds and the koan and all of that, it reminds me of what Sherry says sometimes about we can only see it in hindsight. You know, we may not be able to, but we are being perfectly guided every single moment. And to have that experience that you're describing where you got to see that and didn't even remember that that was the koan or whatever, but here it is. Here it is, you know, sort of the whole tapestry in that moment laid out in front of you and taking you to the place of recognizing how perfectly guided we all are.
Yes, and you know, Rebecca, as you were talking, what drops in is, it's not the, oh, I'm going to make the mental process of, I had the koan, then the answer was this, and now there's the bird song, and therefore it means X, right? The recognition when that recording cycled through was recognition, wonder, astonishment, which put me in touch with the guidance. I wasn't in the process that's also familiar of attempting to make meaning out of an experience and come up with an intellect. It was so in the realm of delightful sensing, right? The insight drops in and the connections get made, but I am not making the connection. It's not a mental process.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah. It's not a mental process. It's not an I. It's nothing. It's not a mind making connections from 2015 to 2020. It's not that.
Yeah.
It is much more of a astonishment, wonder, moment. It kind of flash, it sounds like, you know, a flash of it all.
Well, and I was listening to that recording, and what my experience of that whole process was, why am I being given this piece of information? It doesn't make sense. I don't know why I'm being given this information in this moment. I have no idea how I'm going to use it, what the application is. Am I supposed to think of it this way? That was the recording, right?
Uh-huh.
And what I realized in its cycling past in this moment was the reason, and this is not in the reasoning sense, but in the recognition sense, mm-hmm. is it was a marker of awareness of being supported in that moment. And that in this moment, what that information, that moment was for, was in some senses a revelation of how I was being guided, that I am mm-hmm. being guided, right? Because mm-hmm. The mind would say, this is information is given to me for a content reason. Mm-hmm. But here, mm-hmm. it just felt like the information was marked in awareness, because at some point in my life, I needed to know that I was being guided, and that information was connected to me in that instant. It was such a process. It was such a process level aha.
Yeah. That is just, it's almost impossible to reflect, Ashwini. I can so go to that place. That aha. Right. That moment. You know, the word that actually keeps coming up for me is a tesseract. You know, like a wrinkle in time. And I
right.
don't know why.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
But that is exactly, you know, I don't know. Yeah, just what that experience.
Well, it's an unfolding, right? Because all of yesterday, the dissatisfaction of not knowing a sense of purpose or a sense of ending or a sense of, you know, well, what am I doing here? Identification kind of place.
Mm-hmm,
and to
mm-hmm.
know that to have this experience while I was recording about it just dropped into, I don't need to know, because the guidance
yeah.
is going, I'm being guided. And so there again, we could say the voice from beyond that is giving me the experience, if I look for it, of what mm-hmm. what gives me that comfort, right? And builds the mm-hmm. trust in mm-hmm. this path is perfectly unfolding. I may not know or I may know. But occasionally I'm told, don't worry, you're taken care of.
Yes.
Yeah?
Oh, beautifully said. Yeah. Yes, that we may not know. And we get those moments, those flashes, those exquisite experiences where we just get it on a deep, 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 deep level that we're taken care of. Don't worry. It's all unfolding perfectly for awakening. No matter what the identity is saying at any given time, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know where I'm going, whatever it is, these can come in, these can interrupt that whole conditioned mind process, and like a, sort of like the, you know, a hand swooping down and just reassuring and rescuing that person.
Yeah, and the last thing I would say about when you said that, you know, what practice builds for me is life is always talking to me. There are messages mm-hmm. that are always coming in the next person, in the bird call, in the next thing I read, the ad that I pass on the freeway. The messages come in so many forms. And so mm-hmm. when what is becoming more available is that when I don't feel connected, that I'm not being talked to, that feels like an anomaly, not what's true, what's the default. And and the call becomes, as we were looking at this earlier this morning, pick up the recorder. Find your way back to me is also what is being said.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So the receptors to life talking to us is more the norm than the feeling like it's not. Like that's more the anomaly. But when that is there, the message that comes through, and it's such a wonderful practice. Oh, such a wonderful practice that to pick up the recorder and talk. You were talking about it on open air. You talked about it to me a lot too, but that practice of just talking our way back to here.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It's my feet are here. Now I'm feeling this in my hand or whatever it is, right? You're just,
mm-hmm.
it's not giving voice to whatever the mind is saying it necessarily. It's talking from presence about presence to presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's assisting me to make a movement of attention.
Yes, yes,
yes. It's almost like a transformer, right? Or a clutch where I'm shifting gears from one level of attention on the mental to attention on awareness, and that process bridges that experience, that energy, that movement.
Yes, yes, ooh, exactly. And you know, it's a physical, it is a physical movement that, to actually carry your recorder around with you in your pocket or whatever, so that there's something about, at least in my experience, and I think in yours too, from what you're saying, that pressing record and actually doing it on a physical level, just like using that image of the gear shift, it really does facilitate the movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, we always talk about thought has weight, but awareness calling also has momentum, because I will notice if it flashes through, pick up the recorder, and I go do something else, it's going to flash through, pick up the recorder, and it starts to feel like there's actually a movement of energy towards the world. At some point, that comes through so strongly that it actually causes me to pick up the recorder, right? Even if I've kept brushing it away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like the hand on your back. It's like, do it. Come on. You can do it. Go ahead.
It is so fun.
Over and over again.
Yeah. It is. Oh, it is. And I love the way you frame that with kind of a building of the momentum. Come on. Because, you know, in a way, what I've noticed is how it can kind of take form is I'll feel that impulse, and then I'll almost hear this thing that says,
yes,
you know you're going to do it anyway. You might as well do it now.
Yeah, do it now. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it works. Yeah. And it really works. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Very fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, just a couple more minutes. Does anyone have anything?
Well, this is Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Yeah, hi. And I know it was just a couple more minutes. So I just wanted to say how grateful I am for all these conversations. And it's been very, it has reminded me of lots of things that I have been looking at, all in little pieces, you know. This and this and this and this. Yeah. So I will keep looking at them and bring it up on another call. Bring them up on another call. But I just wanted to say I'm just so happy to be here and to be able to participate, even if you know. So it's been wonderful, and I'm very lucky that where my apartment is kind of feels to me like in it's amongst the trees, and I am one of these lucky people that get to hear the birds, many, many birds all the time, and it's just absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, as Ashwini was saying, just so magnificent, because they remind me of the, like, songs coming down from heaven or something like that.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
You can't be not here with me with that going on. So
I know, it really is. It is like every bird song, every sound is like an on-ramp to hear. And to be amid the magnificence of all those trees and the birds, you're truly a lucky human being, right?
Right. And so anyhow, just thanks for tonight, and everything is great.
Yeah, thank you, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
We're very fortunate.
We are.
And thank you all. Good night.